With a 12x CD-ROM and a 240 megahertz processor, it is the fastest notebook computer the world has ever seen. At least until we create the next one.
Plus minute Apple conversation you're gonna hear all week long. I'm your host Irfan Elijah. Joining me today, go to any smoky, stinky pub late at night and you'll find him at the dartboard hustling the locals out of their college tuition and rent money. Lewis Wallace is here.
Hey, that's right.
That's me, exactly.
Yeah, so much hustling.
Also with us, go to any smoky, stinky pub any time of the morning, the afternoon, or at night, and you'll find him there drinking, laughing, and dishing out a few black eyes to those who make too much eye contact. Leander Caney is here.
Hello.
But not at the dartboard, because
I hate darts.
I have a feeling that if I gave you a dart and offered you $100 to hit the board, I would walk home with that $100. Is that right?
Well, I can do it if you give me a handful of three darts and I chuck all three at the same time. One of them might hit it.
Unlike Lewis, who will take those three darts, turn around so he's not even facing the dartboard, throw them over his shoulder, and all three go directly into the bullseye.
Right.
Oddly enough, I just saw a video of somebody doing that today.
Doing what?
Turning around backwards and throwing it and hitting it in a bullseye.
You're kidding.
What?
Did you do it on purpose?
Yeah. It was like, it's some kind of like promotional video with all these pros sitting around, and the guy looked genuinely, I mean, this is a pro. He looked genuinely shocked.
Wait, like, so he didn't know he was capable of doing such a thing. He just happened to have made it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't do it like every day.
Okay. I was like, we found the Dan Bilzerian of the dartboard. The guy's going to have it all. Well, I know what you're thinking. Surely there's nothing to talk about this week. How could there be? It's one of the slowest Apple news weeks of the entire year. We've got so much good stuff. Here's what we're going to cover this show. Samsung has sent foldable screen samples to Apple. And this had me thinking, do we have a foldable iPhone on the way, like the Samsung Galaxy Fold, aka the iFold? Is one of those on the way? I don't know. I want to see what you guys think about the idea of having a foldable iPhone. I'm not convinced I even want one. Also, you may be pleasantly surprised to hear that Apple may have quietly fixed that MacBook Pro stage light issue. And if you don't remember what that is, we will talk about that. And they only fixed it apparently on the 2018 MacBook Pro. So if you're 2016, 2017, you're still going to be SOL probably. So we'll talk about that. We also have to talk about some very provocative statements that Tim Cook made about the upcoming product line that Apple has. He's very excited, y'all. And he thinks that Apple has some of the most exciting products on the way, which I'm sure Leander is very surprised to hear that Tim Cook said that. Also, Leander is going to be talking about the 13th annual supplier responsibility progress report. I'll insert the crickets there.
Is that a yawn? I can hear you slowly.
I was just leaving some silence so I could insert in some crickets. Leander's promised to make this the most interesting 13th annual supplier responsibility progress report that you've ever heard. So I'm looking forward to that. He's promised to not put us all to sleep. And then we're going to wrap up with this this very fun new nickname that Apple... I just did it. See how easy it is to do, Lewis? I just called them Apple. Tim Cook just received from the Donald, aka the President of the United States, Donald Trump. It's going to be a fun story, I promise. We're not going to get political. And the ending of the story is actually pretty legendary. Something just happened today in this story arc that had me going, Tim, you're a gall darn genius. Let's see here. Before we jump into the first topic here, let me say thank you to Breach for supporting this episode. What makes a data breach the worst breach of all time? How about losing our social security numbers, the keys to our identities? How about losing 145 million of them? Breach is a podcast that takes you inside the world's biggest hacks, how they're done, who does them, and what's really at stake when your private data is compromised. And this season, they're investigating the worst breach ever, Equifax. Man, how come we don't have more people talking about that massive, insane breach? You can listen to season 2 of Breach, the Equifax story. This time, it's personal. Subscribe to, that was my movie voice. How'd you like that?
Yeah,
subscribe to Breach. That's B-R-E-A-C-H in your podcast app right now. That's Breach. B-R-E-A-C-H in your podcast app right now. Also, want to thank Shaper for supporting this episode. Take networking from awkward to awesome with Shaper, the number one professional networking platform that uses your experiences, interests, and goals to help you make the right connections. Whether you're looking for investors, co-founders, a new job opportunity, or just inspiring conversations, Shaper can help you connect to professionals who truly want to share tips and help. Each day, it suggests to you 15 people with similar goals and interests, and then you just... you pop into the app and all you have to do is swipe through the daily profiles and set up coffees with the people who stand out. It's just like Tinder for business people. Now, you're not going on a date with these people. I want to caveat. I want to make that very clear. You're not getting business dates. You might be getting that professional network that you've always wanted. You might be getting someone who might help you develop your skill sets, help you find a job, you know, to build your professional network, which is one of the most important things that you can have when you're trying to grow your career. If you're a professional, the Shaper app should be installed on your phone. It's rated extremely highly on the App Store. I've been playing around with it. It's very intriguing. It's very intriguing, and you will meet all sorts of surprisingly high-quality people. Check it out at shaper.com, S-H-A-P-R.com. That's S-H-A-P-R.com to learn more about Shaper, download the app, and improve the way you network. Let's start with Samsung sending Apple a foldable screen sample. Leander, take it away.
Right, yeah. So Samsung was one of the first out of the gate with a folding smartphone. Now it's trying to entice its competitors, including Apple, to join the foldable future. So Samsung debuted its Galaxy Fold at its Unpacked event on February the 20th, and it has reportedly sent some foldable display panel samples to Cupertino in the hopes of attracting Apple as a client for this new screen technology. There's two phones on the market, two foldable phones on the market right now, and the prices are completely mad. Samsung has a Galaxy Fold, which is the cheapest one,
yeah,
at $1,980, and Huawei's Mate X is a crazy $2,600. And that one actually has the better design. I don't know if you guys saw that. The Huawei one is actually sort of a nice... It folds the other way, doesn't it? The Samsung one folds
kind of like a wallet, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So it has to have a third screen on the front so you can use it as a regular phone. And it's kind of a bit of a chunky, fat guy. And the Huawei one folds inwards. So it actually... outwards.
Outward, yeah.
Yeah, so the screen, it has screens on both sides. And that actually looks like the sort of better design. So, yeah, you know, they want to get Apple. They want to get Johnny Ive in on the old folding action.
The old folding action. Do you think that we'll ever see a folding phone from Apple? Because this kind of seems like a gimmick at this point.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, that was my reaction. But, you know, foldable screens, I'm sure there's a lot that can be done with them. And there might be some really interesting things that you can make with them. They're going to have a future. I think for sure they will. Especially, like you said, Corning has foldable glass, which is crazy.
Right, yeah.
These plastic screens, there was a report last week saying that that these things might be replaced, the plastic screens might have to be replaced at, I think, 10,000 folds. Which I saw one estimate is about 6 months of use.
Well, that was the most surprising thing about this story to me is I didn't realize the Samsung Galaxy Fold, which is $2,000, has a plastic screen. A plastic screen. It's not as clear as glass. It scratches easier. My Nintendo Switch, which cost me $300, has a plastic screen. And you can tell that it's plastic. It doesn't look the same as glass.
Uh-huh.
And it looks just kind of opaque. It doesn't look quite as clear. Yeah. So a $2,000 phone with a plastic screen,
I know.
That's what made me start to think, maybe this isn't an actual serious product. Maybe this is more like a, look what we can do type product.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I mean, I know for sure that Apple's got prototypes of something in its lab. You know, Johnny Ive has been working on these things, for a while. But, you know, unlike Samsung has the complete opposite, you know, of product development methodology, where they throw this stuff out into the marketplace and they see what sticks.
Yeah.
And they're really good at doing a lot, you know, a lot of products really quickly and iterating and sort of learning, and using the marketplace like as a, as a feedback mechanism. Whereas Apple, you know, of course, is the exact opposite. Everything's done in secret, behind closed doors. You know, Johnny Ive and then the industrial design team are working on these things and seeing how they play out before they come out with a, you know, with a real product that they put out there. And of course, you know, Apple also iterates the products, and often the products change, you know, through their lifetimes quite considerably. And often, you know, the first generation of a product can be, you know, quite kind of primitive and a little bit sort of experimental, but not as much as Samsung. I mean, these definitely are, you know, these are really definitely, you know, these are like they're prototypes, aren't they, basically?
Although I have to admit, I do kind of want one. Like the idea of having a phone that has a really large screen, but you can fold it on itself so that it doesn't take up that much room in your pocket. And then when you get it out, you can unfold it and have the whole thing there. Because yeah. Everyone likes bigger screens, right. But you don't want to have that plus size phone doing the pocket pinch in your skinny jeans.
That's the thing, you see. Both Huawei and Samsung, they made sort of full size phones that turn up into tablets, right?
Mm-hmm.
Small tablets. And people were saying that, you know, the obvious thing I think that a lot of Apple fans want is like a regular size phone that smalls down into a much smaller form factor. So, you know, like you remember the old Motorola Razrs?
Oh, yeah. I used to own one.
Yeah. Well, who didn't love that phone? Because it was so thin and so slim, and you could mm-hmm. really just put it in your pocket and you could almost forget it was there. But then, of course, you know, you flip it out. And what if you could do that with a full screen smartphone? If you could have like a kind of a flip phone, you know, that when it opened up, it was it was the same size of a plus screen right now.
Yeah. Or even bigger.
Yeah.
Or like an iPad mini. I mean, they could literally turn it into an iPad mini. Except it's a phone. They'd have to make it a little bit shorter so it could still fit in your pocket, and then just have that all that screen real estate. That would be something I would be interested in for sure. Of course, now if Apple, I mean, the plus size phone, the iPhone XS Plus or the XS Max is what, $1,200, $1,100? Imagine having one that is even larger. It's going to be like $4,500. I don't know if any of us could actually afford to get our hands on that phone.
Yeah, we'll see. You know, because Apple's new thing is trying to reduce prices now, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Now that's an interesting strategy, and I wonder if they're going to be applying that across all of their specific products, or if they're just looking to lower the prices of some of their products. And I think we even have a note in the. In the notes here today about the price of the MacBook Air. In fact, Lewis, why don't we just jump into the Apple rolling the dice, y'all, on its upcoming products, because this has to do with the story that you were going to tell us about.
Wow, is that like a professional segue?
Yeah, that was as professional as it gets. You sound surprised, actually.
I know, we on the right podcast.
Wait, hold on, let me try that again. Lewis, yeah, can you just, can you go next there? Because I think that this might have to do with your knowledge.
this all came about from a Apple shareholders meeting that happened last week, and you'll be surprised to hear that Apple CEO Tim Cook is very upbeat about where the company is going.
It's all happening, y'all.
I believe he used the phrase that Apple's upcoming products will, quote-unquote, blow you away.
I got excited when I read this, but I do every time. It doesn't work on Leander. He's callous to this. He doesn't care when Tim Cook gets excited about this stuff, but I genuinely get excited. I'm like, oh man, Tim Cook, the most unexcitable man in all of Cupertino, is actually getting excited. It kind of piques my interest.
Well, it's what he said next, I think, is what was more exciting.
Yeah. Okay. Well, he indicated that it's not going to just be more of the same. You know, Apple's branching out. He said he's never been more optimistic about Apple's future. Mm-hmm. To be honest, that kind of thing, we've heard this a lot, right? I mean, he often throws out those kinds of sort of platitudes, right? He's never been. I love it. And these shareholder meetings, I mean, usually it's dull, right? You know, approving board members, taking boring questions. But, you know, this is like, you know, back to the magic pipeline talk. I love to hear this stuff. And I wasn't at this meeting, but I can practically hear him saying those things. You know, he kind of gets this look on his face where you can tell he's got this juicy secret and he's not sharing the details. Right. You know, but
it's with a sly smile and all his southern charm.
A little bit like, you know, the cat that ate the mouse or something, you know, and you kind of get in the zone. He's pretty convincing, even when he's talking about products that don't exactly scream innovation, you know, right there at that very moment.
Everyone's expecting iterations, right, of products, right? That, you know, like a new MacBook, a new iPhone, a new iPad, blah, blah, blah. But That's what I thought was interesting. Apple's branching out. You know, they're gonna get into something new.
Yeah, they said Apple's planting seeds. So what's it gonna be?
Intriguing.
You know, AR glasses, autonomous Apple car,
a fridge,
an electric toothbrush,
folding iPhone.
Man, a camera, an Apple camera. That would be a legendary piece of equipment.
They're gonna call it the Irfan.
I wouldn't mind. You pay me a big enough royalty, we can make that happen, Tim Apple. You know, they put in the iPhone camera technology into a camera that actually has a larger sensor with a better dynamic range than the one they have in the actual iPhone. Oh my, that would be a game-changing piece of equipment. That would be an incredible camera. The images it could take.
Have you seen the numbers of cameras they're selling? They've decimated the camera industry.
Look, we know what the reality is. Don't mess with the fantasy.
Why don't you go and pick up a quick take off of eBay?
A what?
Remember that? They used to make one.
I would actually love to own one of those. I wonder if you could still do anything with it. It's probably only like 1 megapixel.
Right. Yeah, if that.
That was an odd Apple product, wasn't it? We should probably elaborate because most people probably have no idea what you're even talking about.
Yeah, well, it was, when was this? Like back in the early mid-90s. Must have been early 90s. Early to mid-90s, Apple came out with a very early digital camera called the QuickTake. And like Fun said, it was probably like about 1 megapixel resolution. It probably had a giant memory card in it, like those old CF cards, you know, that, like 2 megabytes. But it could probably store like, I don't know, two dozen pictures. I don't remember the specs exactly, but the thing was big and huge. And it looked like a prop out of Star Wars, right? You know those weird binoculars that Luke had,
right,
when he was looking across the desert or whatever? Uh-huh. That's kind of what it looked like, didn't it? Like a giant piece of really unwieldy equipment. But it was one of the first digital cameras on the market. I mean, there weren't many at that time, I don't think. Apple was definitely like early out of the gate.
I wonder why it didn't end up taking off. Clearly, it didn't do very well.
Probably it was rubbish. It probably cost a fortune.
There you go. It was just a total piece of crap.
It definitely didn't take off at all. But that was kind of the stage. You know, like I think this is like it's probably also market timing, right? Because this is a point when Apple was getting really bloated. You know, just before Steve Jobs came back, they were making monitors, scanners. You could buy an Apple branded scanner. You could buy an Apple branded printer, inkjet printer, laser printer. You know, they were doing monitors. They were doing everything. You know, every single thing in the PC industry was selling. Apple was in. You know, they had hundreds of products, hundreds and hundreds. Newton, PDAs. You know, and
Wi-Fi.
Then cameras. Yeah, right.
Monitors.
Hearing that kind of adds a new dynamic to Tim Cook's products, or Tim Cook's comment about how they're going to have products that are going to be branching out. It's
uh-oh.
If they introduce a new Apple printer on stage, I'm gonna be more worried than excited. We got a whole line of Apple printers. We're releasing a camera. We got a new Apple pager that you might be interested in. It's like, uh-oh.
Yeah. I know. Yeah, exactly. They're going to do everything.
Well, the good thing about this specific meeting is that Tim Cook said that they are trying to lower the cost of the MacBook Air. Specifically, he called out that computer and said that's a goal of Apple's to lower the cost, which, you know, it used to be $1,000, and then they raised the price 20%, as they did with virtually everything they sell, and now it's $1,200, which I think for what the MacBook Air is, I think honestly is too expensive. Considering the layout of the marketplace, I think it would be much better positioned at $899 or $999. $1,200 is... I mean, I wouldn't spend $1,200 on a MacBook Air. I know that there are people that do, but just considering the specs that it has, it wouldn't be something I would be interested in.
Yeah.
But I hope they do this across the board and not just to the MacBook Air. I hope that they are able to reduce the prices of everything, which may be a pipe dream.
Yeah. Well, if you look at charts, though, I mean, I can't remember who it was. The Simco, I think, Horace, did he do like had a chart of, you know, the prices of computers and since the mid-80s or whatever. PCs, and of course, you know, they've dropped sharply. I mean, you know, the for what you can get now for the money,
yeah,
historically,
but compared to like a Chromebook, I mean, you know,
well,
that's
right, but they're junk, you know, that's
yeah,
the thing.
Yeah, I know, I don't know that they're junk because I've never used one, but I mean, in comparison to that, it's a real hard sell, right? Oh, would you like to pay $199 for a computer that you're going to give to your kid to take to school, or are you going to pay you know, $1,300. I mean, that's a pretty big jump.
Well, I think $1,000, like for the MacBook, you know, like $1,000, I think was sort of a sweet spot, wasn't it, for that kind of computer that you give your kid to go to college with?
Yeah.
Yeah, $999 is a pretty magic price point. You get over that, you get into four digits, and it's got a...
Yeah.
It just feels different, right?
Right, definitely.
Definitely. That small price increase makes a big difference.
I haven't done that. You know, my kids... I mean, I gave my daughter a MacBook, and it wasn't even a new one. I'd been using it. It was a hand-me-down. You know, this is like, what, five years ago now? She's still using that same machine.
They do last forever. My last MacBook I used for 5 years, and it was still going strong when I got rid of it. The only reason I wanted to get rid of it is because it just was struggling during the video work that I'm doing, and I was doing some green screen stuff, and it wasn't able to do things as fast as I needed them to be done anymore. But other than that, I would have kept that machine. That thing was for browsing the internet, for doing any light office productivity, for even editing the podcast. It never broke a sweat. It was great for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it was five years old. Yeah.
You know, there's one more thing that he talked up at this, and I think it's, you know, it's maybe not as exciting, but he talked up Apple's in-house chip development.
Oh, we did?
Yeah.
What was that all about? Tell us.
Well, you know, Apple engineers, they've been killing it with these chips that they use in iPhones and iPads lately. You know, they crushed competition. And so Apple is reportedly designing chips for Macs that could show up by next year, and they're supposedly working on chips for modems that could free them from third-party suppliers. Anyway, Cook said they're working on chips now. Now, they'll show up in 4 or 5 years. So,
wow.
I mean, that's kind of a... To me, that's kind of mind-blowing that they are working on something that far out in advance, but maybe that's just standard practice. You know anything about that kind of chip development, Leander?
Well, not really, not a little bit. I mean, I saw some, you know, speculation that, you know, Apple is going to be moving to its own chips. Like you said... next year, right, 2020?
Yeah, that's the rumor.
And they're more like systems on a chip, you know, so they'll have like a secure enclave, they'll have a special area for machine learning, you know, so they do AI. And I can't remember what the other components were. Oh, GPU. All of it, you know, sort of like integrated into one system. Which is really interesting because, you know, like it used to be all about raw megahertz and raw speed, didn't it? You know, the faster the chip, the faster your machine would go, and it could just run the operating system quicker. But, you know, they have all these specialist chip tasks now, you know, AI learning, machine learning, you know, being a big and important one. And for Apple to be able to build that into their chips, you know, and build a system that could run a Mac using the same sort of code base. And this is all about Marzipan, too, right? They're trying to... for developers, anyway, you know, get a common code base so that iOS developers can get their apps to run on the Mac too,
right.
With you know, minimal changes. They're definitely converging on this. It's going to be really, really interesting, I think, in the next couple of years to see how this plays out. And you know, the iPhone, the latest iPhone, I mean, it's faster than most MacBooks, isn't it? It's almost as fast as a Mac Pro.
I mean, it depends on what tasks you're measuring, but yeah, in many tasks, it can be faster than an actual, you know, laptop computer is, which is incredible.
Oh, and it's way, way faster than the chips they're putting in the Samsung, you know, the Android phones. I mean, it's blowing those stuff out of the water.
By the way, so this is a total tangent. Did you watch any of the videos of people reviewing the newest Samsung Galaxy S10? So we're on the 10th iteration of the Galaxy phone, I think. I'm assuming. I actually don't know how many there have been. I'm just assuming they've gone from 1 to 10. Maybe there's only been 5. But anyway, I've been watching people play with this phone, and people are scrolling up and down on the phone, right? Man, the scrolling on those phones is still a horrendous piece of turd. It's jumpy. It's not smooth in any way. And I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I mean, here we are on the 10th generation, and the scrolling is still not good. And then you look at videos of like the original iPhone, and right from the start, it was like butter. You know, it's like boom, boom. It's so fluid when you're scrolling on the iPhone. That's one of the things that you just don't even think about when you're using an iPhone. And then you go to Android, and the experience is so
bad.
It's so bad.
You know, like, and this is why in surveys, you know, like I think, what is it, 20, 30% of Android users will aspire to getting an iPhone as their next phone. You know, Android's only popular because it's cheap. It's a cheap alternative to, you know, to Apple.
This is probably also why 70% of iPhone users will only date another iPhone user, because they just realize that someone who uses an iPhone, they're sophisticated. They clearly make good buying choices. They're probably really fast in a race.
Exactly. You know? They're reliable. They're trustworthy. They make a good partner.
Yeah. I mean, I can look at the computing devices that you use, and I can tell within three or 4 seconds whether or not I want to be your friend.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's like, I know. It is, isn't it? It's a big tell.
All right. Let's see here. Oh, before we do this Apple 13th annual supplier responsibility progress report.
The part that everyone's been waiting for.
I'm actually looking forward to this part of the show because my kids have been keeping me up, and I'm just going to rest my eyes. I'm not going to be asleep, but I'm going to rest my eyes while Leander does this. but I want to mention the stage light flaw. So this is a flaw that we talked about on a past show. And according to iFixit, it's a problem that all MacBook Pros made after 2016 and after were susceptible to. And the stage light flaw is also called FlexGate. It's caused by this display ribbon that wears out as you open and close your MacBook Pro. And the unfortunate part is this problem seems to develop at about a year in of you owning the machine, so right after or right before your warranty expires.
Well, right, just as it just expired.
Hours after your warranty expires, it breaks. And in order for them to replace the cable, they have to replace the entire top part of your computer, which is expensive. It's like a $600 or $700 repair. Well, people have been waiting for Apple to address this issue, and it seems like they have, although not verbally, as they often do not do. iFixit was doing a teardown of the 2018 MacBook Pro, which is the machine that I just happened to use. And it looks like Apple has increased the length of the display cable so that when you're opening and closing the lid, the display cable doesn't rub up against the logic board as it is prone to do in the 2016-2017 MacBook Pros. So they're thinking this is the fix that will probably make it so that this cable doesn't wear out and give you the stage light effect. Now, if you're not familiar with the stage light effect, as I mentioned earlier, it happens at the bottom of your display. And when you see a picture, you can see why it's called stage light. Think about it. If you're like at a live play and they have all those lights shooting up from the floor and it creates like this spotlight effect shooting from the top, from the bottom to the top. That's what it looks like. It creates all these like spotlights that come up from like the bottom of your screen and shoot up to the top. So it looks terrible. And if you have it going on, you're going to go mad having to stare at that every day. So more often than not, I think you'll probably just dump the money and get it replaced. But it seems like this might actually be fixed in the 2018 MacBook Pro. So if you have a 2018, you might be good. And if you have one before, well, you know, prayer might work. you can always just pray and hope. That's another strategy that you can employ.
I've replaced one of these cables myself in an older machine.
Uh-huh.
What a nightmare.
Oh my, you're Mr. I break it too. Like when you go to fix stuff, did you break anything?
I think so. I don't think it ever worked ever again, but I think I had it like, it was one of those old, what were they called? Power books.
Uh-huh.
And it was before the unibody, you know, so they were like sandwiches of it was like a layers and layers of metal.
Mm-hmm.
There was actually sort of, there was a bottom, there was a middle part, and there was a top part, and it didn't go back together properly. So there was all these gaps in it when I tried to put it back together again. I think it worked, but it had these big gaps in it.
So was your screen like at like a 45 degree angle, just like sitting there on your machine? Like what was gappy about it?
Well, it was like because I think you had to take. You had to dismantle the bottom part, you know, like where the keyboard is.
Yeah.
In order to plug it in as well as the screen. Getting the back off the screen wasn't too bad, but it was the other part. You had to dismantle all of it, like working from the bottom up, you know, where the battery compartment is. So I had to take off the bottom and then the guts and then the keyboard or whatever. I can't remember what it was, you know, but...
You just go for it every time. You just try to fix it yourself, don't you?
Well,
I mean,
yeah,
you did the same thing with your iMac. Is that fixed or is that kaput? Because you tried to take the screen off that, right? And you ended up cracking it.
Yeah, it's got a bit of a cracked screen.
Does it still work?
It's okay. Yeah, it works fine.
With a crack?
It's just the glass in front of the LCD. So
okay.
It's upsetting. It is upsetting. I don't like it when I look at it. It does cause me to wince.
I wonder if Apple could replace just the glass for you. after looking at you judgmentally for trying to fix it yourself for 30 minutes.
Exactly. Yeah. They're just like, I can say the genius would just be like shaking his head and they'll take it over and they'll be whispering and they'll be looking at me.
Yeah, exactly. Disapprovingly.
Oh, God. Well, I don't want to do that because this machine's, you know, the reason I did it on my own is because the machine's like old anyway. I mean, it's like, this is another hand-me-down. It's like an old iMac. And, you know, I don't want to pay any, I'm a cheapskate. I don't want to pay any money to get it fixed properly by someone who knows what they're doing. So yeah. I did it myself.
Someone who's properly trained, sure.
And, you know, it did work. I mean, the first time I took it apart, it worked. It was like, this is the second time I did it. And I used this third party tape that glues it back together again. And that stuff's really strong. You know, that's why I couldn't
get it. Well, it sounds like it was too strong. Because isn't that what caused it to break when you were taking it off again for the second time?
That's exactly what happened, yeah.
So it was just like permanent adhesive. I mean, Apple probably designs it so that they can actually disassemble it again in the future, and this is just super glued on.
That's exactly what they did. You know, like everyone complains about Apple and the unrepairability, but the glue that they were using was, you know, you could defeat it. You could get by it. You could take the thing to pieces. But then this third party glue that I used, these glue strips, you know, they were much, much stronger.
Like industrial Chinese glue.
Yeah, right. And it was like my own impatience a little bit too, you know, because it wasn't coming apart. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to brute force it. Yeah.
Yeah. And you were on like beer four, so you're getting really angry. You crushed the can on your forehead and you went, I'll show you.
Right. I know. And I did. Oh, well.
Okay. And I still, what? Yeah.
Well, I still didn't fix the issue, you know, so it's still, the fans are still raging.
Oh, you're kidding. So it's broken and it hasn't been fixed.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Maybe you should sell it on Craigslist.
One day we will. One day.
All right. Before we do this very exciting supplier responsibility report, which Leander has promised to make extremely pleasant to listen to, let me say thank you to LinkedIn for supporting this episode. When it's time to make a hire for your small business, naturally you want to find the best person for the job. You're looking for an L. Caney. You're looking for a Lewis Wallace. Odds are that person is on LinkedIn. LinkedIn Jobs makes it easy to get matched with quality candidates who make the most sense for your role. LinkedIn Jobs uses knowledge of hard skills and soft skills to match you with the people who fit your role best. People come to LinkedIn every day to learn and advance their careers, so LinkedIn understands what they're interested in and what they're looking for. When you use LinkedIn Jobs to hire someone, your matches are based on more than a resume. Your LinkedIn Jobs matches are based on skills and background, but also interests, activities, and passions. Matching lets you quickly get a group of the most relevant, qualified candidates for your role. That way, you can focus on the candidates you want to spend time talking to and make a quality hire you're excited about. Customers rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering high-quality hires. And you can post a job today at linkedin.com/cultcast and get $50 off your first job post. That's linkedin.com/cultcast, linkedin.com/cultcast. Leander, I don't know how you're going to do it, but I have high hopes. I'm ready to kick back, and you're going to wow us with some of the choice tidbits from this very exciting, very spicy 13th.
Everyone is on tenterhooks waiting for this every year. They just can't wait. It's like Christmas, isn't it, when Apple comes out with its supplier responsibility report.
And it's the 13th iteration. This has been going strong for 13, so they just got to keep it spicy. So go ahead, regale us.
I think, you know, I think it's important. I think, you know, what Apple's doing is important. Anyway, so the 13th supplier responsibility report is that they come out with it every year. They audit their suppliers, their supply chain, you know, most of it being in Asia, in China. They report on things like labor and environmental issues, you know, in the supply chain. And these things used to be kind of really depressing. I mean, it was just a list of problems of exploitation and misery, you know, like... but they've been getting better year after year. And then this year was kind of, I think it's like a bit of a milestone because they have managed to almost completely eradicate, you know, issues like child labor and bonded labor.
Labor? I don't even know what that means.
Well, bonded labor is when the worker has to pay like a bribe to the factory or often a recruiter to get a job.
Huh.
So if they're going to get a job, you know, like... at Foxconn, I shouldn't say Foxconn. I'm not sure whether Foxconn was actually affected, but you know, like a company like Foxconn, you know, one of Apple's suppliers, mm-hmm. You know, they pay often. I think it's like a month or a couple of months worth, equivalent to a month or 2 months worth, to get a job.
Hmm.
You know, so they pay a bribe to the factory in order to work there. And it was really common. You know, I looked it up. I went back and looked in 2013. Apple, when they found that suppliers had engaged in this practice, they forced them to pay the workers back. And in 2013, only a few years ago, they forced suppliers to pay back $6.4 million to affected workers.
I mean, you guys think in a country that probably doesn't have very high rates of, well, people who work there don't get paid very much. That's a huge sum.
Right. Well, that was equivalent to about 22,000 entry-level Foxconn employees.
So everybody was paying to play.
Yeah. 22,000, which is a lot. And this year, you know, they said they found only two cases affecting about 287 employees, which, you know, that's still a lot, 287. But, you know, it's a big, big difference from what it used to be.
That's like a 99% reduction.
Yeah. And they found one instance of child labor where some 15-year-old kid faked some ID to get a job. Mm-hmm. And then back in 2013, they found 170 cases of child labor. So they've made some big strides, I think, you know, like, and these are two big issues. And in fact, the majority of the labor, and here's the important part, the majority of the labor violations they found were related to working hours and paying of wages and benefits. And of course, you know, overtime's always been a big issue with a lot of these workers. You know, a lot of these workers in Shenzhen, you know, they tend to be from rural communities, younger people. They want to work as, you know, they come in, they're away from home, they're living in a dormitory. They want to work as much as possible. They can make a lot of money in a short amount of time, spend a few years, send a lot of money back home, save up money, you know, to move on to do something else. And so Apple's been forcing, you know, these companies to abide by, I think, Chinese labor practices where, you know, to keep overtime to a certain minimum. I don't know what the numbers are, but, you know, they can't force them to do overtime. They can't also do excessive overtime. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of like a little bit, you know, controversial. A lot of workers, I think, report that they want to work as much overtime as they can. But anyway, these were the issues: overtime and then sort of paying benefits and paying wages, which is sort of fairly standard practice. But, you know, it seems kind of remarkable to me that, you know, improving labor practices has been a big priority for Cook since he took over. You know, Steve Jobs kind of said that he cared about this, but I think, you know, he kind of paid it lip service at best. But Cook does care. You know, Cook comes from the operations background. I mean, you know, making the factories, you know, running the factories has been his, you know, where he built his career. And I think he's sincere when he says that he's want to reform this stuff. And I think, you know, like in 13 years, the 6 or 7 years since he took over, there's been a big, big difference. You know, he's made a big difference in these practices. I don't think it's been acknowledged. You know, Apple's got a reputation for being, you know, for having this kind of exploitative supply chain. But I think there's been, you know, behind the scenes, some pretty big reforms. Of course, it's not, you know, completely perfect. You know, one of the things is that we're taking Apple's word for it. It's all self-reported.
Yeah.
So, you know, I take them at their word, but it would be nice if there was some, you know, some third party confirmation of this. And plus, they're not really doing the big reforms, which is things like unionization, you know, allowing the workers to unionize.
Yeah.
So there's still a long, long way to go. But, you know, I thought that was pretty, and you know, fairly significant. And also on the environmental front, I mean, this report also said that they've made some big progress too. It has announced that all of its final assembly plants for the iPhone, iPad, Mac, Apple Watch, AirPods, and HomePod are certified zero waste to landfill, which I think is pretty cool. That's a pretty big update. And they also reduced greenhouse emissions, 466,000 annualized metric tons. That's equivalent to taking 100,000 cars off the road for a year, which is a lot. And then 30 suppliers have made commitments to 100% renewable energy, you know, for making Apple products. So it's not all of their production, but it's Apple production. They've committed to make it to go into 100% renewable. That also is a big deal because, you know, Apple's already running its worldwide operations on 100% green energy. But getting supply chain, which is about 3/4 or 70% or something like that of its carbon footprint, to also running on green energy, that's where it should be focusing its efforts. And I think like 18 months ago when I was doing the reporting for the Tim Cook book, I think it was like a handful, it was like six, had committed to being, you know, 100% green. And now 30. And you know, Apple's estimating that it's going to get the supply chain to 100% green energy in about, I think, 8 to 10 years.
Which is kind of incredible if you think about that these are Chinese factories, and without Apple's influence, I doubt they would care about any of this stuff at all.
Yes or no, yes or no. No, but no, probably not. Because, I mean, look, China's a huge polluter. I mean, it's running on coal power. Their economy was growing so fast that, you know, they were opening up, what is it, I don't know, dozens of coal power, you know, coal-fired power stations a year. And I think, you know, the Chinese have definitely seen the light. I think there's definitely at the national level, China is, I think, starting to realize that they have to change, you know, their energy system to something much more renewable. And they're definitely taking the lead in things like solar and wind. I mean, that's where a lot of the innovation is coming from, China, in those areas. But things like transport and manufacturing are still huge sources of greenhouse gases, and getting those industries to change, you know, is really going to make a big difference. You know, people can do as much as, you know, you can put some solar panels on your roof and ride your bike to work, but you're not going to make a difference. You know, the real change is going to come from big companies like Apple, and you know, and its Chinese supply chain, the whole Chinese manufacturing industry. I mean, like, that's where most of the world's products are made.
Yeah.
And if they start to transform to green energy, that's a big and significant change. You know, that's going to benefit everybody.
Now, if only we could get Apple to start focusing on one of the other big problems, cow farts.
Well, that is, you know, I know that everyone's the Republicans have been joking, weren't they, about the Green New Deal, about how they want to take the hamburger, the Democrats want to take everyone's hamburgers away.
Don't touch my hamburger.
that sounds good.
Meat production is another big area of greenhouse gases.
Now, look, I'm going outside my area of expertise here, but is it the actual meat production, or is it actual farts from the cows themselves that are the problems?
Methane. Stick a little methane in the atmosphere.
Boy, I hope they don't take the methane meter over to the El Caney house, so we're going to have another greenhouse crisis happening right there in San Francisco. Send the regulators over there. Bring the corks.
That was a long setup.
Okay, well, you succeeded. You made that far more interesting than I thought that it was going to be. Yeah. I think because you clearly care about it, that you actually made it something that I wanted to pay attention to. So you did a good job. Let's wrap up with this story. This will be a short one. And I just wanted to mention this because I thought this was really funny. We're not going to get political here. But Tim Cook was meeting with Donald Trump at, they were at some meeting. Oh, the American Workforce Policy Advisory Board meeting, which happened just the other day. And Tim Cook was sitting next to Donald Trump. They were talking about something, and I think Donald Trump was trying to pay Tim Cook a compliment. And in the course of talking to him, he said something along the lines of, well, I have the quote right here when I just read it. Does anyone have a good Donald Trump impression? Mine's terrible. You know, every time I do my Donald Trump, it sounds like JFK. So I'll just
give it a shot.
Okay. We're going to be opening up the labor forces because we have to. We have so many companies coming in, Trump says. People like Tim, you're expanding over and doing things that I really wanted you to do right from the beginning. I used to say, Tim, you got to start doing it here, and you really have to put a big investment in our country, and we really appreciate it very much, Tim Apple. And I think the room got awkwardly silent for a moment as people were trying to figure out if Donald Trump just called Tim Cook, Tim Apple.
Right.
And it turns out I think that he actually did. And I don't think he was saying Tim, comma, Apple. I think his brain just got his wires crossed and he called him Tim Apple. And I was like, well, the dude's not wrong. I mean, he's the CEO of Apple. But my favorite part of this story, besides the fact that Donald Trump coined a wonderful new nickname for Tim Cook, is did you guys see Tim Cook's Twitter bio?
Yeah, that was great.
The mad lad. He changed his name from Tim Cook to Tim Apple sign.
I know, pretty funny.
That was smart.
That's the only joke I've ever seen Tim Cook make. And it was an instant classic.
Right, yeah.
See, he does have a sense of humor.
And on Twitter, where, you know, Trump's bound to see it.
Right.
Yeah,
15 million times.
Well, the thing blew up like crazy, didn't it? I mean, you know, yesterday afternoon and then all day today, it's been nothing but Tim Apple jokes, stories. I mean, everyone's chipping in. There was someone did a pretty funny Photoshop of the Apple executive web page.
Right.
The executive bios, you know.
Eddie Internet.
Johnny Design.
Eddie Internet.
They were pretty good.
That's hilarious. Anyway, I thought we'd wrap
someone
up.
Was pointing out it was a shame it wasn't Michael Dell, because that would have been... He would have been safe there.
This is my thank you, Michael Computer. I changed his name to Laptop. Thank you very much, Michael Laptop. I want to thank you for all you've done for America. Oh man, I love it. Good times. All right, let's go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. But if you want to come reach out, say hi to us on Twitter, we're all there. We would love to hear from you. You can talk to us about any of the stories we mentioned on today's show. I'm at Erfon, E-R-F-O-N. Leander is at LK, and Lewis is at Lewis Walsh. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute album conversation you're going to hear all week long. I forgot how the rest of it goes.
I've only been doing it for 5 years.
Seven. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. See? The wires got crossed. It can happen. That can happen to anybody. You're just on autopilot, and you end up calling someone, you know.
Yeah, right. Cultpod.
Tim iPod.
They're the man.
Oh, there he is, medium-sized Lou.
Hey, how's it going?
Look who decided to join us.
I can't believe it. I mean, usually when people say, oh, I'm going to be 15 minutes late, I'd like start checking my clock, you know, half an hour after the original time.
You're always making comments about how late I am. You're always waiting on me.
Not really you so much.
Who is it? What? Not me.
Who could it be?
Mm. It rhymes with flea dander.
Flea dander. I never heard that one.
What about meander?
Oh, yeah, that's even better, yeah.